This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. It is your Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, live from Las Vegas, downtown at our Circus Sportsbook studio. I am Ben Wilson, in for Stormy today. It is an absolute pleasure to be back with the former NFL GM, Michael Lombardi. Although, I read the VSiN updated NFL betting guide before the season kicked off, Michael. You wrote all about this 34-year drought of the Cleveland Browns not finishing ahead of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the standings, and kind of figured for them to get over that hump this year, they'd have to win games like the one they lost last night, and that's where we'll start with just a debilitating kick yourself in the face sort of jaw-dropping bad performance from Cleveland with four turnovers last night. Pittsburgh, with a lot of betting support, wasn't the right side, but that doesn't all the time matter, Michael. They get the win in our game of the night last night, 26-22.
You hit the nail on the head right there. Those are one of the games that you handicap correctly and lose, and you have to move on. It's on to Cincinnati, right? Like, you can't let that affect you. Picking Cleveland in the game was the right handicap. Who could have predicted the turnovers, the mistakes? Look, the first rule of football is you have to avoid losing before you can win, which means, you throw the ball into cover two, and then Bryant plays volleyball with it. The next thing you know, you're down 7-0. At least you come back, you fight back, you get a field goal, you move the ball. Chubb's running as well as it could be, and then you get the injury. In spite of that, your defense is playing lights out. I mean, they're playing lights out. They give up the one play to Pickens on the 70 yards. I think the coverage was wrong. The safety went over to the wrong side. But to me, that defense, well, I was right about that defense this summer. That defense is really good. And that defense is going to continue to be good. And even with injuries, they'll be good. They just got to figure out who they are offensively and how can they minimize Watson from hurting them. Because let's face it, he hurts them.
In a game where Cleveland out first downs Pittsburgh 20-9, outgains them 408 to 255, had the ball way more than Pittsburgh did by to the tune of about an 11-minute advantage in time of possession. Four turnovers, two of them returned for touchdowns, basically ended up being the difference in the game as Pittsburgh wins as the home dog over, does cash 26-22. Pittsburgh, big question I have for you, Michael. It's kind of trying to figure out where to now downgrade this Cleveland offense, sort of in a tale of two parts. One, it's the injury to running back Nick Chubb. Head coach Kevin Stefanski after the game says feared he will be out for the season with the undisclosed injury, but of the knee variety, and combined with a quarterback in Deshaun Watson who has looked average at best through two games. A lot of expectations for him making a big leap after having a whole offseason to prepare under head coach Kevin Stefanski's system. So where do you go with the Cleveland offense that basically won in spite of itself in week one and in week two was legitimately responsible for a loss to Pittsburgh on the road?
Well, I think what you do is you build around your strengths. It's similar to the Jets, but this is a little bit easier of a problem to manage. Everybody was excited about Jerome Ford's big run, but when you take that run out of there, I think he had 15 carries for 37 yards. So they're going to have to do something at the running back. Here's what I do know, and I tweeted a little bit about this last night, that the Browns, the Jets, and shockingly, the Houston Texans are the three teams that have spent the most cash this year getting their team ready. Now, it makes sense for the Jets and the Browns because they went all in. I mean, they basically went Teddy KGB and put all their chips in the middle of the table, right? Where I don't understand why Houston, what Houston's doing, but we'll get to that later. I mean, why not call up Chris Ballard? Look, here's the reality of Nick Chubb. It breaks my heart he got hurt. There's no nicer kid. There's no better human being on planet Earth as a player and as a talent than Nick Chubb. You feel so badly for him. Mm-hmm. That being said, life goes on. The game goes on. This team's built around a running game. This team's not built around the quarterback. And we saw that last night as he struggled. They're not talented enough at the other positions to really allow it to excel. They need the threat in the backfield. You take that away, it's a problem. They got to call Chris Ballard. To me, they have no choice but to call Chris Ballard. Offer him your two. Give him your two and your give him enough draft capital that equals a one. And see if the kid will play on his existing contract and, come in and see if he could do it. You add that piece, all of a sudden those odds are going to go up. And the way they behaved this year, Ben, it would shock me if they didn't make that call.
With where
there's
Jonathan
nobody
Taylor
out there. People
is at,
are saying,
yeah,
go get,
I get it.
Yeah, people are saying go get Kareem Hunt. Okay, great. Kareem Hunt went to New Orleans, and he went to Indianapolis. He doesn't have a contract. You know why? Because he's out of shape. He wasn't working out. Like, nobody wants to sign a guy who's not ready to play. I mean, look, Chris Jones was holding out But we saw he was in shape and he was ready to play. Ask Jacksonville. Ask Brandon Scherff. Sure. He'll tell you he's ready to play. So why go down that road? You know, Cam Akers isn't playing. If Cam Akers was going to help the Browns, he'd be helping the Rams.
You're totally right that it's a completely different setup with where Jonathan Taylor is at relative to the other running backs you've just talked about right now on PUP list for the Indianapolis Colts. But you know, I also look at where Cleveland is at and think, as much as Jerome Ford, he was the storyline after Nick Chubb left. You mentioned how the numbers are inflated because of the one big run that he broke. But at the same time, this is a consensus top five offensive line. Deshaun Watson as a run first quarterback has showed flashes so far, just that the athleticism is still there. The passing is not. Only Zach Wilson and Justin Fields have had worse EPA plus completion percentage over expectations through two weeks in the NFL. Justin Fields and Zach Wilson.
I thought he was headed to the Pro Bowl. I didn't miss that. Okay.
Yeah, I knew you'd appreciate that.
I just want to make sure we talked about that. Yeah.
I knew you'd appreciate it. But the point is, let's say Cleveland isn't able to make that trade. They don't get a Jonathan Taylor. They basically decide, let's just rely on a really good offensive line. We can make this work with basically league average running back play. Is that enough for you still? I mean, it's a defense that has seen only Dallas be better on an EPA per play basis. They're minus 145 to make the playoffs. They look like a legitimate team that is, you know, a piece or two away from being a legit AFC contender.
Yeah, I don't see them not being able to do it without. They need an elite back there. You know, nobody's going to go in the game. Look, the line's good, but how many runs did you notice last night where Chubb makes the guy miss, makes the first guy, makes the second? You know what I mean? I mean, those runs that Chubb has are just so damn good, and it's hard. And, you know, here's what I wrote about it. You know, I wrote about this for VSiN.com online. You can go read it there. But I've been completely destroyed by the 76ers, and most of the things that they've done have stayed in my craw and have bothered me for zillions of years, including the Wilt Chamberlain trade, which I was too young to really remember. But anyway, they signed, I call it the Scotty Williams syndrome, Ben. They signed Scotty Williams from the Bulls. You know, he was playing on the Michael Jordan Bulls team. He'd come off the bench, he'd go 16 minutes, he'd get 5 rebounds, he'd average about 8 points a game. You know, so the Sixers, using their logic, said, okay, if we sign him and we play him 32 minutes, you know, then that means he'll get 16 points and he'll get 10 rebounds a night and it'll be perfect for us. It's just what we need. Wrong. When you take a role player and extend the role, he may not be the same player. I think we're seeing that with Madison in Minnesota. Really good behind Dalvin Cook, maybe not so good on the own. So to me, if the Browns are really going to go all in, they at least owe a phone call. How much is it going to cost? In my new book, I wrote about this. It's like, we're one player away. Teams that are one player away will make a trade. We saw it with the Minnesota Vikings. They traded for Herschel Walker. We saw it with a lot of teams do this. And there may be some other back that you might be able to sneak out. I don't think it's Cam Akers. I just don't.
Yeah.
But I do think they need another runner.
Football Done Right, by the way, now available wherever you get your books there. Recently released from our guy, Michael Lombardi. I just want to get a couple minutes, too, on the Pittsburgh side of this, because let's be real, this is a Fugazi box score. The final score does not really indicate what we actually watched on the field from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And while you could say the Steelers offensively have faced two of the best defenses in the NFL so far, San Francisco and Cleveland, who both looked really, really good. Kenny Pickett, I was just looking at those NFL advanced stats leaderboards for quarterbacks so far. Pickett, 26th out of the 32 qualifiers in EPA per play plus completion percentage over expectation. The movement on offense with OC Matt Canada, there's just not much space right now. Steelers have looked lost on the offensive game planning. Where are you at with this Pittsburgh team that is very fortunate to be 1-1 after getting back-to-back home games to start the year?
Yeah, very fortunate to be 1-1. And, you know, defensively, they were down corners last night, too. I mean, Fitzpatrick went out. I think Cam Sutton's hurt. So, you know, to me, they have to run the football effectively. And I said all summer long, the one thing when you play a Jim Schwartz defense, it's hard to run the ball on him. The way he teaches run fits, the way he can build that 8-man front, it's hard. And, you know, so they had 21 carries for 55 yards. That's not Steeler football. This week they'll play the Raiders, which is really a grade way down in defensive personnel from the last two. They'll run the football. They'll look better offensively than they have all season because of that. So Pickett will look better, but your point's well taken. Everybody wants Warren to be the back all the time. Problem is, did you watch Warren pass protect last night?
Yikes. Major yikes.
Yikes is right. You know, Warren had six carries for 20 yards, too. I mean, everybody's given Najee Harris. I mean, I hear people say, well, he's the second coming of Zeke Elliott. Najee had 10 carries for 43 yards. I mean, you know, I mean, that was way better than the guy everybody's pushing. That was way, that's a yard better than Warren. Now, I think Warren's a really good change of pace player, and he's really good in the passing game, but he's not Tony Pollard. Let's not go there now.
Totally makes sense.
I think Canada just takes a beating. He just takes a beating. You know, he takes a beating because they play to their strength, which is their defense. And last night, you know, their defense won the game for them.
Certainly did. You will also be very interested to see from the betting market where injuries have resulted in the line going toward the Raiders was a pick 'em in a lot of shops. If you wake up on a Tuesday, an hour into the early afternoon East Coast time, this is now Raiders. A lot of spots, 1.5, even some books going to Raiders -2 with the additional injuries for Pittsburgh free safety Minkah Fitzpatrick. The latest one was released from the hospital after undergoing a testing on a chest injury. That from NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. But you already had a big defensive lineman in Cam Hayward moved on IR. Wide receiver Deontay Johnson on IR as well. So this is a tough spot right now for Pittsburgh. Having said all that, Raiders 31st in EPA per play defensively through 2 weeks, whereas the Steelers just played teams number 2 and 3 overall in the Browns and the San Francisco 49ers so far to start the season. So that's your line right now, 1.5 and 43 on the total. In the meantime, for Cleveland, big move against them with the injury to running back Nick Chubb. 3-point favorites against the Titans with a total of around 40. We'll talk about the other Monday night game when we come back. We're just getting started. Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you this football season and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now and save 10% off a VSiN Pro annual subscription when you use promo code Lombardi. Get full access to everything we do, including our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting splits, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Remember to use promo code Lombardi to save 10% off a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. You can sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Well, we mentioned open the show, Michael. You kind of pour one out if you were a Browns backer last night and you lose despite feeling like you're on the right side. Hey, how about if you laid 3 with New Orleans? Saints defense just completely dominates for basically 57 minutes, and then Carolina gets the garbage time the backdoor push drive complete with a 2-point conversion. And you talk about misleading box scores. I mean, Carolina could barely move the ball, and yet that ends up being a 20-17 final, a push on the side and under on the total on what was one of the lowest totals of the week, down to 39.5.
But don't you go saying anything bad about that play calling, Ben. That's what Frank Wright told me. Don't you say a bad word about that play calling. I mean, it's amazing when you get a reputation for being a great offensive coach. And then because nobody goes back and studies it, right? Nobody really goes back and looks at it. You know, in 2000, when he took the job in 18 with Andrew Luck, they were 4th. The next year, they didn't have Luck. They went to 18th. And then with Rivers, they actually got it to 7th. And then lately, I'm talking about Indy, they were 18th and 23rd. And when they go through the yards, the passing yards and points, I mean, the last 2 years, he's been 30th in points. In 22, I mean, so he struggled. Like, he hasn't been a great offensive mind. I think the offense is horrendous. I think his offense is worse than everybody's killing Matt Canada. I actually think the Panthers... And I love Bryce Young, but I'm going to say this. I think the Panthers got worse. I don't think they got better. I think they got worse. If they had Bryce Young with what they had last year, I think they would be better. I think they got worse. They could run the ball last year. They had power. Their offensive line came off the ball. I mean, they could move the football. Mm-hmm. They beat New Orleans at home with Baker Mayfield, right? I mean, last night, you know, I don't feel sorry for Saints fans, for Saint bettors pushing. Because I watched the game, too. They were horrible, too. Like, Carr was trying to give that game away, wasn't he?
Neither team with than 4.6 yards per play. Yes, it was an ugly watch, for sure.
You take away the 45 and the 42-yard pass. Olave makes a great catch. And Shaheed makes a great catch, too. You take those two plays out of the equation, right? That's 87 yards of his 228. I mean, he was, I mean, we've seen this before from Carr, right? You've seen it before. You watch Raider games. I don't feel bad. I think to me, I'm going to keep saying, I think the Panthers have gotten worse offensively.
And I was just pulling
I mean, they've
up,
got worse as a team.
Yeah. You know, where the in the updated win total live now on DraftKings, Panthers 5.5 is where you're now at in season win total. Juiced over at minus 125. It's almost like it's hard to even make legitimate judgments on a quarterback in Bryce Young so far when he's got no chance on so many dropbacks. And as much as we want to jump to conclusions on a number one overall pick early, and sure, he, you know, eye test wise, he looks small when he drops back in the pocket. He is a small guy to begin with. That was the big issue and why people were down on him coming out of college, out of Alabama. But when you watch the offensive line and how they get blown off the ball almost every single play, the lack of weapons around him to make any sort of plays, you know, it almost seems inevitable that you're going to get an offensive night of 4.3 yards per play, a team that puts up less than 250 total yards. And you're right, despite the Saints really doing nothing for most of the game on offense, you never felt like Carolina had a chance to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, look, this whole conversation we could have here about why the NFL is a copycat league and why people are constantly copying what other people do. To have this kid in shotgun all the time, to have no real run game, to not have, I mean, last year the Panthers were under center. They weren't all shotgun runs. You know, they could run the ball. I'll give you the perfect example. The Patriots. Patriots are all shotgun now. Last year, Stevenson averaged 5 yards a carry. In the Matt Patricia offense, which took a ton of criticism, he averaged 5 yards a carry. Okay, they averaged 4.3 yards a carry. Mac Jones was not good enough last year. He averaged 6.8 yards per pass, right? This year, when they got Billy O'Brien, they're supposed to be better. They averaged 3.5 a run, and Mac Jones is down to 5.7. And they're actually a more talented team this year than they were last year. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, they're in shotgun all the time. There's no play action. They can't make a big play. It's hard. They don't have Tyreek Hill. The Panthers don't have Tyreek Hill. People keep saying, well, their receivers aren't open. Well, the reason they're not open is because they're easy to cover. But when you run play action, they become easier. It's harder to cover.
Now you
and
look
so
at
this
where,
whole
yeah.
trend of going. One of the things that gives me a sense of comfort watching all these games and watching Baltimore is finally they put Lamar under center. He looks completely different than he did last year.
Yep.
Like this whole shotgun. We're in shotgun. Look, I'm not against shotgun. I'm not. But how about what are the best offenses in football right now? Dallas, under center. San Francisco, under center. How about the Rams? McVay might be doing his best coaching job ever under center. Cleveland, under center. I think you have to have balance in that, Ben. And I think what happens to poor Bryce Young, he's back there. There's no help.
None whatsoever. One, it goes back to what we saw happen in the offseason where Thomas Brown's brought over from L.A. as the offensive coordinator from the Rams. And yet Frank Reich has been adamant that it is his team to call plays for. If let's just say tomorrow Frank Reich were to go up to the podium and say, all right, this has been a disaster so far. Thomas Brown is going to be calling the plays going forward. Where would you stand on Carolina going forward?
Well, I would want to know what's going to be the run game because I know James Camp and the line coach is really good. I know James Camp and he's a really good line coach. Look at what that line did last year. Look at that line last year compared to this year. What's the difference? Look at the Indy line after he fired Gooch, who was there before he got the job. We call him Gooch. He fired Gooch. He brings in his own line coach. Look at that Colt line after over the 4 years when he was there. They've got softer. Like at some point, you know, like they're not better. Just because you change doesn't mean you've improved, right?
Yeah. Long way for Carolina to go right now. And they lose Shaq Thompson at linebacker last night. Carted off. The reports early coming out of the game is he will miss significant time. And we are seeing a big line move already on the Seahawks for week three, Michael.
Yeah, and they went into Seattle last year, ran the football effectively against Seattle and beat Seattle. Think about that. Think about Seahawks, that.
Good. I wouldn't shock me if this Seattle line gets to 7. It was a 4.5 look ahead, reopened, or 4 look ahead, reopened 4.5, then reposted 5.5 after the game last night. Now we're up to 6. Some shops already to 6.5 there with Carolina going into Seattle. You know, on the flip side for New Orleans, it's a 2-0 start, but as you pointed out earlier with the quarterback and Derek Carr, you think about where New Orleans is in. They look so anemic anytime they even sniff the 20 and in. I mean, it's like the most impotent offense inside the 30. Whereas, you know, between the 30s, they look fine. And Derek Carr has been he's been about average if you look at the advanced numbers so far. But how can you have any trust in the Saints offensively going forward with how just skittish, unconfident they have looked in those red zone situations? It's basically been they've almost been 0-for so far on their nearly 10 red zone situations to start the year from a touchdown perspective.
And especially if you get pressure on them early. If you get like the Saints, like the Panthers did, they got pressure on them early and that was it. You know, and then in the fourth quarter, they've won 2 games in the fourth quarter. And how have the Saints won 2 games in the fourth quarter? Carr's made great throws down the field. He closed the game out against Tennessee with a deep throw, and he won the game this week with a deep throw, with 2 deep throws. But you take the deep throw out of the game and force him to have to move a little bit in the pocket, right or left, like the Panthers did last night. I mean, you know, he stood back there and took sacks. I mean, the one time he just knew it was coming, he just buckled up.
And now where we go for week 3, it's fascinating because we'll do a segment a little bit later in the show, Michael, called "Will the Real Team Please Stand Up?" Thanks to our producer, Steph, for coming up with this. There's a bunch of 1-1 teams where it's like, where do you even go with what we've seen with good performances one week, bad the next? And it's a really good litmus test now for the Green Bay Packers, right? It's a line that has come down. It was Packers look ahead laying 3. Now it's Green Bay -2 with a total of 43. And quarterback Jordan Love has been, you know, very up and down so far through 2 games. It'll be a tough sledding against a really, really good Saint defense. But it's also a tough spot, Michael, for the Saints coming off of back-to-back really tight games, short week, going on the road in the Packers' home opener at Lambeau.
No question. It'll be a tough game for them. You know, but look, if they can run the ball like Atlanta did against them, you have a much better chance.
And we,
I mean, that's the one fly in the Green Bay ointment defensively, is they've yet to be able to stop a good run game.
It was the issue last year. That's why I had some concern about Joe Barry being retained as DC, second worst run defense a year ago on an EPA per play basis. Granted, there have been injuries early, but it has still not shown a ton of improvement. And that was the downfall for Green Bay in week number 2. Also, offensive injuries abounding there for the Packers, which we'll get to in a little bit. They will be one of the subjects of our "Will the Real Team Please Stand Up?" We have a lot to get to, though, on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Whole lot of headlines around the league. Market, I got my odd screen in front of me, Michael. Numbers are flashing, popping, moving everywhere. As we get into week 3 of the NFL, we'll discuss some of the top headlines when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Looking to be a better bettor? Of course you are, and tens of thousands of people have already turned to Juice Reel. That is Juice, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, and gives you an analytical edge backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors in all 50 states. Use that data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool, Juice Reel. That is juice like orange juice, Reel, R-E-E-L. It's absolutely free. Download Juice Reel to your iPhone or Android device today and become a better bettor. With Michael Lombardi, I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy today. We have, as I mentioned right before the last break, Michael, a whole lot of odds moving already on the market going into NFL week 3, and a lot of injuries to get to. We'll talk a lot of running backs right now because Saquon Barkley of the Giants, he is going to be out at least the next couple of weeks. Ankle injury confirmed after the win coming from behind over the Arizona Cardinals. And now a short week, too, for the Giants. You go to San Francisco after getting an absolute gift in the desert against Arizona. Seeing this line basically 10 market-wide, has been some buyback after the 49ers got as high as 11. But you have to wonder, where does this Giants offense go and what does it look like without Saquon Barkley and against one of the best units in the league in San Francisco?
Well, one of the best units in the league didn't play like one of the best units in the league last week, right? I mean, you got to give McVay credit. And I know they threw it 55 times in the game, but, you know, they held their own in there. And Matthew Stafford was flying it across. He only was sacked one time. He had to move a bunch. But give them credit. They had a great game plan. I think what the Rams have done with this lack of talent that they have is remarkable. Can the Giants duplicate that? I think it's going to take all their efforts, because the Niners just didn't look as dominant as they did on offense defensively against the Steelers. They didn't look that way here. Now, I know we took the meaningless field goal for the point differential. I'm convinced, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that his analytical guy said take the points in the press box. I'm convinced of that, like in the tiebreaker. Because there's no way Sean would have thought, you know, he would have kneeled it down, but somebody said it. No, it's a good idea. Okay, that's why the guy's up there. But this is a hard one for the – I mean, they're going to get pressure. We saw last week when Arizona was fresh, they did put pressure on Daniel Jones. But in the second half, when they were tired, it was touchdown, 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 field goal of the last four drives. So this one's a hard one for them. And look, let's face it, the Giants, we had such high hopes for them defensively. They were so good on third down last year, so good in the red area. This year, they've yet to force a turnover. And they've given up 40 – they've given up 74 points in two games to – you know, and let's face it, the Cowboys didn't move the ball that much on them. It was more turnovers. But the Cardinals, what Joshua Dobbs did.
If it wasn't for a complete self-implosion of Arizona, that's probably not even a competitive game. If we're being honest, 28-7, mid-third quarter, Arizona had the game won. We're 16.5-point live favorites. And then you all know the rest. Giants come back, win the game remarkably, 31-28. Yeah, I look at the offensive line and see a left tackle in Andrew Thomas, who's been banged up to start the year. He is questionable. Now Ben Bredesen, the left guard, is on the injury report. Yeah, the most surprising thing to me, you kind of alluded to it with the 49ers-Rams game, was that Rams have a pretty weak, at least on paper, O-line, and yet they held up really well for about a half and a, you know, half of the third quarter against San Francisco. You have to think, though, after San Francisco really turned up the pressure defensively in the second half, you see that translate into Thursday night, where this Giants offensive line with no Barkley to help out Jones as a quarterback, you have to think it's going to be rough sledding for this Giants offense. And a big reason why, I'd imagine the total, probably like a team total for the Giants, will end up being really, really low. It's a 45 overall total right now, which generally correlates to around 17.5 on that that team total, with 27.5 for San Francisco. Hard for me to see the Giants getting more than 17, don't you think?
Yeah, me too. But look, I mean, the Rams blocked them earlier. I mean,
they did.
Let's face it, Alaric Johnson, Jackson, the left tackle, he played really well against Bosa. I mean, you know, Bosa's a great – they held up, which shocked me. I thought they would take it over, but they didn't. And Stafford had time. And I think, like I said earlier, McVay did a great job of game planning that. And they did a wonderful – they were able to do it. I mean, look, I'm going to tell you something. If Burrow doesn't play on Sunday in Cincinnati – The Rams will beat the Bengals. The Rams will beat the Bengals. Now, they're not going to beat them with Jake Brown. I mean, Matthew Stafford will throw the ball effectively against them, and they'll protect. Because let me say that the Rams' offensive line blocked the 49ers as well as anybody. They'll block the Bengal front.
Sure. It just the last thought for me, Thursday Night Football. You know, it's hard to want to lay a huge, you know, double-digit number on a short week. These games tend to be very sloppy and tough games to get through on Thursday night. Hard to want to lay 10 with San Francisco, but a team total under 17.5 on the Giants, that to me is the way to play Thursday Night Football if you are wanting to bet that before the total comes down. And you talk about injury news. You know, market, Michael, is reacting. You speak of Joe Burrow as a quarterback for Cincinnati. Like, this market reaction is almost indicating the expectation that Burrow will not be out there for the late Monday night football start against the Rams. I'm seeing 1.5s as low. Some offshore books are down to 1 market wide. So you think that's how it ends up playing out in Cincy?
I mean, DraftKings New Jersey has it -2 here. I am. So yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the books move in this number. And let's be honest here. The Bengals haven't played well. I mean, they can't get they're in one formation all the time. I was having this conversation with a coach today in the league about, you know, people catch up to you at some point. They're in 11. They've taken Chase out of the game. He's got 7 catches for 70 yards or something like that. He's averaging 10 yards a catch. Doesn't make any explosive plays. You know, you're asking Burrow on a bad calf to drive the ball. He can't drive it. I mean, forget the injury at the end of the game. I thought he was struggling to drive the ball watching the game. Even if he plays, he's not going to be very good. They don't have a run game. They don't have a lead blocker. They can't control the edge of the line. I think they're in trouble. And defensively, they're not the same team. I mean, the safeties, you know, they lose both starting safeties. And then now they have injuries creeping up on them. I think to me, the way the Rams are playing better than the Bengals right now if Burrow doesn't play. But even if Burrow plays, if that number that number's never going back to seven, even if Burrow plays, because the book's telling you if he plays, he's not going to be very good anyway.
Yeah, anywhere from one to two in the market. And this was a look ahead of 7.5. It reopened on a Sunday night at 6.5. And now here we go all the way down to some ones, 1.5 or twos. I'm sure a lot of bettors. Now, this isn't available right now because of the Burrow injury question marks, Michael. But I'm sure a lot of bettors will look at Cincinnati and they go, well, they were 0-2 last year. Looked awful the first 2 weeks.
Different 0-2.
Made the playoffs and were a good in-season bet to get there. Look, Cincinnati at 0-2, I look at them as being in a much different place than they were at this time a season ago. And you talk about the defensive personnel losses, 22nd in defensive EPA per play so far through 2 weeks. To me, that feels like a sucker bet right now. As much as we know it's a high ceiling for Cincinnati, I don't know how you can say, well, just because they did it last year, you should go ahead and try to get a better number on a to make the playoff bet right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that last year, I mean, I keep saying this all the time, last year's last year. Then is then, now is now. And until we figure that out, we're never going to be very good in betting. You got to move past that, right? Then is then, now is now. And I think to me, that's the most important thing. I mean, the Bengals, they're having a hard time blocking. Jonah Williams is having a hard time blocking. They're going to have a hard time blocking Aaron Donald.
Think about that total too, where it goes from here. I think my biggest advice on that game, you know, look ahead, total was 45.5. So we've already seen a 5+ point move with the expectation Burrow is out, yet the total's only gone down a couple points. To me, Michael, that's not really indicative of and taking into account fully the injury scope here. So if there's a number actually to get behind, you think about the strength and how the Rams pass rush can look, especially against a backup quarterback and Jake Browning of Cincinnati. I'd expect that number to go even lower, sitting at 43.5 right now amidst a bunch of our injury concerns here for week number three. I just want to throw one other at you real quick here, Michael. We mentioned running backs here to start the segment, and this Charger Vikings game, could this be the most unbettable game in NFL history? Chargers and Vikings, couple of 0-2 teams where no timeline for running back Austin Eckler. That's the report out of the Chargers and head coach Brandon Staley as he comes back from his ankle injury. So no Eckler, and yet another kind of vintage Chargers performance over the weekend where they had the game in the balance, had the game and the opportunity to win, and yet couldn't do anything offensively as the defense certainly let a bad Tennessee offense back.
Did you take notes on that 2-minute drive?
It wasn't good.
At the end of the game? Did you see? I mean, it was the most amazing 2-minute drive I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he's got the ball at the 49-yard line with 2 minutes to go and all three timeouts. And he basically runs, I think he runs like 8 plays. Let clock time just tick off the clock incessantly. And he ends up at first and 10 at his 14 with 51 seconds and all three timeouts. And he ends up running 3 more plays.
Yep. As a Titans better, I had a teaser plus 3.5.
I recommended the Titans too, Ben, thought for sure it was a loss. I thought it was definitely going to be, they were going to give up the score. And yet then in overtime, they do what Joystick typically always does. He comes out, he throws 3 incomplete passes, punts the ball back, and next thing you know, they lose.
Everyone wants to focus on...
I actually like them this week, though. I think this will be a shootout this week.
Huge move to the over, by the way. This was, it was 50-51 when the line came out. We're up to 54 now, so...
This is a very hard week. It's an easy week for Survivor. It's a hard week for picking games because of the point spreads being the so many games above the 3.5 in that 6 to 8, 9. Then we got 13, we got a 12, you know what I mean?
Factor in injuries, it is a very challenging week 3. And a lot of that is we've watched a number of teams in the league look really good one of the 2 weeks, look really bad the other. And that's why we'll dive into our Will a Real Team Please Stand Up segment next. Here on the Lombardi Line, we'll talk some Bills, we'll talk some Lions after the break.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on the NFL action with great offers every single game day. If you are a new customer, you can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Just throw $5 down on any of this week's epic matchups to walk away an instant winner. Football is more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with code Vegas. New customers can bet just $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, with code Vegas. The crown is yours. Still to come on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, we'll welcome in our weekly guest, Aaron Moore, a writer at VSiN.com. Excited to have Aaron on a little bit later, 2:30 Eastern time. And segment I've been looking forward to, Michael. Will the real team please stand up? We have so many candidates. I mean, it feels like half the league you could say that for right now with a bunch of one-and-one starts.
Well, I think part of it too, right, is, you know, it's the September is a little bit of a hard month to evaluate, handicap and evaluate. The other thing is we have not really seen the team define who they are yet. And that's going to be the challenge. That's going to be the teams that start to win in October, November, December, and the teams that don't make that consistent leap. You know, you've got a pretty good idea who you are now as a team, and you've got to be able to figure out what it's going to take to win and what you have to avoid to lose. And I think that's going to be up to the head coach, how you want to play the game. All this noise about, Zach Wilson, three interceptions. He threw them in the fourth quarter. Like, that didn't hurt them. Their defense hurt them. They couldn't get off the field on third down. That was the reason they lost, not sure. Zach Wilson's three interceptions. So I think you got to keep it, really understand who you are.
And so one of the teams we're talking about, it's the Buffalo Bills, who lost to the New York Jets in week one and was what was certainly a box score anomaly game in that loss. Then a really slow start against the Raiders, end up beating down Las Vegas 38-10. You know, one of those things, though, where advanced numbers so far, and you give me a hard time for loving the advanced analytics, but yeah, to me, I just use it as a basis for where to set expectations for these teams. And Buffalo has been a top 10 defense advanced numbers wise through 2 weeks. Just 1-1. Josh Allen actually has the best completion percentage over expectation of any quarterback in the NFL, which I was surprised to see at with the numbers. And yet they come out against Las Vegas, look really, really sluggish out of the gates in a spot where you expected them to play with a ton of passion and energy in a home opener, get down 7-0. And it took a Jimmy Garoppolo horrendous interception to completely flip the game on its head. So where do you stand on a Buffalo team that is 1-1, did look good down the stretch in week two against Las Vegas, but that's also a Raider team with a ton of deficiencies on defense?
Well, I thought for the first time in a while, they finally had an offense. They ran an offense effectively. They looked like an offense. He took profits. He wasn't trying to force the ball. He wasn't trying to throw the football down the field. The Raiders were going to give him completions, and he took them. And they ran the football effectively. They looked like a complete offense, and they were effective and efficient running their offense. Defensively, I would be really leery about declaring them a good defense. I really would. There were a lot of plays the Raiders left on that field. There were a lot of plays the Jets left on that field. And so their safeties are a liability. They're not a big team whatsoever. If they were to play Cleveland, if they were to play these teams that can really run the football effectively, Dallas or those, they're going to have a hard time. Their linebackers are very small. They rely on playing nickel. And Garoppolo did not play well at all in the game, nor did any of the Raiders. The Raiders' offensive line probably was the worst of all of it. But there was ample opportunity. They didn't have Devontae Adams was open on the tape pretty much almost all game. Mm-hmm. So I would not run away with it. I think Buffalo has to behave the way they behaved on Sunday against the Raiders. Take the profits, run the offense, play from in front. They're a nickel defense that needs to play from in front.
And you'd think, you talk about discipline, when you think about a veteran team who's had multiple deep playoff runs and a quarterback in Josh Allen who is now at the point, he's not a, you know, not a young first rookie contract guy anymore. You would think that would be easy, but you still get the sense that he struggles with that. The team struggles with that at times. And so that's why we've seen a shift now in the AFC East betting odds. Bills plus 110. They're now the second favorite behind Miami, who have come out guns blazing, two wins in the first 2 weeks. It'll be interesting to see how they look against a Washington defense that certainly on paper, you expect them to be a very, very good unit going on the road, laying nearly a touchdown against a Washington team that is 2-0, even if that feels like a bit of a fraudulent 2-0. And we'll get a good idea of where, you know, do you talk about discipline, Michael? How disciplined will Buffalo look in a game they certainly should win, probably should win by margin next week?
Well, I think it'll be a hard game for Buffalo because Buffalo, we're not sure Buffalo is very good up front. I mean, we're really not sure about that. I mean, when you watch them against the Jets, I mean, the Raiders look like they spent the week in West Virginia. You know, I'm not sure that really worked out well for the Raiders. They came out the first play of the game, the right guard got pushed 5 yards in the backfield. Josh Jacobs lost 5 yards. I mean, it was not, they were not ready to play. And I think the coaches on the staff would be the first to tell you everybody played a part in that. I think Washington will be ready to play. They'll have a home field again. Everybody just assumes that they're easy to move the ball on. I mean, New Orleans went up 21-3, and they were moving the ball until Russ decided to be inaccurate. You know, one thing we have going for us here is you have Bienemy understands how to play against this Buffalo scheme with McDermott. They've played it before in the past. They understand it. So he'll have an idea. And Sam Howell played well last week, in spite of me thinking he wasn't going to. In the crowd noise of Denver and the Mile High in Denver, they did a nice job. So, look, I think Buffalo's a good team. I don't think the first game is who they are, nor do I think the second game is who they are. I think they're still a good team, and it takes the right kind of team to play them. They will struggle with Miami. They will struggle with Miami because Miami will be able to attack them in their secondary because they're not very fast. Their safeties will be a problem. If you watch the Miami game against New England, New England's safeties really kept the big play from happening.
Sure.
You know, they lined up three across the board. Yeah. You know, and so Miami will be able to attack Buffalo. Right now, to me, Buffalo, Miami, assuming they can stay healthy, can be the best team there.
Makes sense from what we've watched in 2 weeks so far, and that is on deck where Buffalo hosts Miami.
Plus, Miami doesn't have to play bad weather up there.
Huge schedule break, by the way. Miami gets to go to Foxborough in week two on a 70-degree clear night in the Northeast, and they get to go to Buffalo in late September. That's a not a bad setup by any means.
No, I mean, it's unbelievable, right? I mean, you know, and that's what they need. I mean, if Tua gets wind, it's not going to be good. I'm just telling you, it's not going to be good. They need that weather.
All right, another team we're wanting to see, will this real team please stand up? It is only fitting that we go to Detroit and the Detroit Lions, where, you know, we sort of felt like the opening night win over Kansas City. You know, how would we be talking about Detroit, Michael, if Kadarius Toney basically makes three wide open catch opportunities? They're probably 0-2.
You took the line right out of my mouth. I mean, you know, everybody got carried away with the win. You know, I thought Kansas City's defense was the winner of the game. I mean, Montgomery's out. The Gibbs has got 14 carries in two games. Who's taking the place of Montgomery? Let's be clear here. They need to run the football for Goff to be effective. They need to run the football for Goff to be effective. This defense has given up 57 points in two games, and we know Kansas City wasn't very good, right? We know Kansas City wasn't very good. So, opening day. I don't think they've improved defensively, especially against the pass. I think every game's going to be hard. I think every game's going to be a problem. Goff turned it over last week for a pick six. And, you know, I think it's going to be one of those where they're going to have to find a way to win the game in the fourth quarter. Here's the margin. Think about this, Ben. They have scored 31 points in the second half. They have allowed 30. They've allowed six in overtime.
Pretty amazing. And you think about the defensive reinforcements that Detroit brought in for DC and Glenn. The thought was this would go from one of the worst defenses in the league to potentially a mid-tier group, which could be enough to get the Lions over the top. And yet, through 2 weeks, 25th on the overall efficiency numbers, just overall on defense, and they lose arguably the biggest piece brought in the offseason, DB Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, torn pec on Sunday, and he's out indefinitely. So do you really see this getting any better anytime soon for Detroit?
No, I really don't. I really don't. I think it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be really hard. They're going to have to play the kind of game that they've been playing, keep trying to score points. But if they get against a team that's like Seattle, that's very effective, you know, Seattle can match them. I mean, they did come back from 10 points down, and they had a chance at the end of the game. Campbell kind of went retreat a little bit, played for overtime. I think they had a chance in that game if you watch the tape closely. But,
definitely.
You know, and then they couldn't stop them. I mean, you got to be able to make a play. You can say, well, Hutchinson got called for a holding. They had a 3rd and 10 that they converted to. They couldn't get off the field there.
No doubt. And it'll be, I can't help but laugh because, you know, me being the resident Wisconsinite, one of the Wisconsinites here at the network, watching Desmond Ridder against my Packers over the weekend, thinking this guy could, it feels like he's going to throw a pick every time he drops back. You know, Ridder, look, give him credit for leading a couple of drives and making a big fourth down run for the Falcons. Now Atlanta goes to Detroit. Talk about litmus test for both sides. Can Ridder actually look a little bit better and competent against one of the worst defenses in the league? That's my big question here for Week 3.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. You got to go into Wisconsin, got to deal with that turf, right? They're going to slip. The speed isn't going to be the same. I mean, the one thing I was encouraged about watching Atlanta, they actually put Pitts at tight end and tried to block him over there.
Yeah.
And he actually tried. I was impressed.
Yeah, so Atlanta goes to Detroit this week. Then Lions on a short week go to Green Bay Thursday Night Football next week. We have some more real teams attempting to stand up. We'll get into our headlines for hour number 2 when we come back right here on the Lombardi Line.